is an absolute honour and pleasure to have a chat to Hall of Fame legend, 88 times Group 1 winning jockey, one of the few who has won all four majors, a Caulfield Cup, a Melbourne Cup, a Cox Plate and a Golden Slipper, Mick Dipman. Good morning, Mick. Great to chat. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Great to hear your voice.
Gee, how long have you been back in Australia? Because normally you are based in Singapore at the moment, but I suppose in this COVID world, you've been back home for a while?
Yes, correct. Well, I came back in March. I haven't really been able to get back until now. But they've opened it up like as a pass holder, work pass holder, I could go back, but there's no guarantee they can get home. If anything goes wrong back here, you're stuck there. So I'll just sit pat for a while here and see what happens.
Well, it's good to see you back in Australia and enjoying the sun up on the Gold Coast. But what do you normally do? What's your usual role these days over in Singapore?
Well, I manage a guy there that races about 40 horses. He races them himself. He's been in the racing game for a long time. I've been with him for about 20 years now. But I still do a lot of work on the phone, advise some of the trainers, you know, go through their programs. I talk to him on the form. I do the form for him. So, yeah, still a fair bit involved, but of course you can do it much better when you're back there.
Absolutely. Do you keep a close eye on Australian racing when you were based in Singapore and now that you're back here as well?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I enjoy watching the races. I'm in Queensland. I've been out to the Magic Millions while I've been here. Had a couple of days at the sales. It's been great.
Oh, I bet you'd be pretty happy to see your son Luke doing so well and be back close and give him some advice, maybe. What are your thoughts?
Yes, very proud of him. He's, you know, he doesn't ride light, but he's doing a great job. Of course, he's a stable rider for Waller here in Queensland. Mm. And Chris has given him a lot of opportunities. He's going terrific. He's really done a good job at it. I'm very proud of him.
He's doing very well in the Metro Premiership. Has he based himself on you? Does he still ask the old man for some advice and feedback?
Yes, occasionally. Well, we speak every day. They get to a stage where they've got their own mind on things, don't they? But now I can still give them advice. You know, never too old to have a little bit of advice.
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, when we look back to your career and where it all started, five-time Premiership winning jockey in Queensland, born in Rockhampton, so probably good for you to be back in the home state.
Yes, well, I've had a home on the Gold Coast for 50 years, so, you know, I'll always stay here. I think it'll always be my home base, and I look forward to, you know, one day getting back from Singapore and, you know, spending a bit more time. I've been away too much, but no, it's you've got to have an interest. Racing is my interest. Singapore has been very good to me, so I'll do it while I can, and when it's over, I'll be back to the Gold Coast.
I'm keen to talk about some of your highlights because they're the legends of Australian racing, and you raced in an era where we had some of the best open horses that we've seen and some of the best jockeys that we've seen, and I'd imagine it was pretty competitive on and off the track. What was it like when you're riding against the likes of R.S. Dye and Peter Cook? Did tempers flare at all in the jockey's room?
Oh, yes. There's plenty of times there's good arguments. But I think overall, you know, like jockeys, you make mates with your certain jockeys, but every day you're at the races, you're competitive, you know, you're rivals. You're pushing for each other's rides, and there's always a bit of animosity there, but overall, you know, I find them pretty decent sort of blokes, you know. So, you know, Shane Dye, I'm still friendly with him. I'm still friendly with quite a lot of jockeys. So, it's, you know, it's been a terrific terrific lifestyle. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun every day, like riding winners or riding group winners. You never get sick of it. So it's a big job, dangerous job, but you certainly get a lot of thrills out of it.
Was it true that there was a bit of a dust up between yourself and Peter Cook one day?
Yes, yeah, that happened at Rose Hill in a Golden Slipper when I went on bouncing away, and Peter thought that I must be wrong. I had other ideas. It didn't last long. It was over in 5 minutes.
Let's talk about some of those great horses. We might as well start at the top with the Melbourne Cup in 82 because it will go down in history as one of the very special Melbourne Cups, because not so much for the win of Gurner's Lane, but the runner-up, Kingston Town. Have a listen to the closing stages.
Bianco Lady was checked and so was Silver Bounty. Kingston Town's in front. Port Carling's getting through with Noble Comment. And here's Gurner's Lane driving through on the inside. The Kingston's in front, but Gurner's Lane is going to him. Gurner's Lane after Kingston Town. Gurner's Lane goes home too well and beats Kingston Town. Noble Comment ran third in the cup. Then
it is one of the iconic Melbourne Cups, Mick. What are your memories of winning our most famous race and knocking off the champion of the day, Kingston Town?
Well, it was a great day for me, no doubt, and it was a great thrill. But, you know, it was sad a bit. It was like Kingston Town, he was such a great horse and had a big weight that year too. He probably should have won. He was a little unlucky. But you don't give Melbourne Cups back, you know. Like, you can say all they want about Kingston Town. But that year it was my Melbourne Cup, so I'm not going to apologise for it.
You were probably a bit unlucky because he was your only Melbourne Cup winner, but was there one or two that might have gone begging? Was Natsuki one that you probably should have won that year? You just got beaten by Empire Rose?
Yes, he should have won. He was a back marker. He used to get back a long way, but I come to the outside on him in the straight and he was picking up pace. He was going to win. He only had one horse to pick up inside the furlong pole and they came from inside. There was horses pushing out, came out to interfere with me, which would have cost him half a length. So he was a bit unlucky at that stage. If he had missed that, he would have won. I thought he had won. He went across the line, but that mare was so big, she'd had a big snoz in front. But, you know, my body was in front of the jockey inside me, so I thought I'd won. But, yeah, one that got away.
What about if they'd run Red Anchor in the Melbourne Cup that year? Matt Stewart, we just spoke about that phenomenal Spring Carnival in 84, he won the Guineas, the Cox Plate and the Derby. Was there any temptation to run Red Anchor in the Melbourne Cup? And if he did, would he have won it, do you think?
Well, Tommy, he'd run them in anything that he thought they had a chance of winning, especially those big races. But in those years back then, you couldn't get a late nomination for a three-year-old. Now you can. You know, if they win the Derby, you can get late nomination into those races now. But he wouldn't have got in those days, late nomination, but he was a great horse, like he wouldn't have got off the fifth cup, I can tell you. The further he went, the better he went. And if he could have run in that year, he would have had a lightweight. He would have bolted in.
Where do you rank Red Anchor among the champions that you rode?
As good as I've rode. You know, I may have rode horses that had his ability, but they weren't as smart as him. He was a great horse in the race, had a great temperament and a good racing brain. So he just didn't use any energy that he didn't need to let off. He was just a horse that, you know, went along in the right position, and when you ask him to go, he could go. He could make two or three runs in a race. He could go and stop, always settle, never over racing, and he had a will to win like you wouldn't believe, you know. Great horse.
What was that period like with you and TJ, the dominators in Australian racing?
The best part of my career. I had 11 years with Tommy and never had a cross word. Great man to work for. You know, he had great principles. And it really was an eye-opener for me. I went down there when I was 33 when he offered me the job. Like, if I'd had someone looking after me and advising me, I would have gone when I was 23 because, you know, I thought at 23, I didn't have experience, but I was a super. So I think that, you know, getting there late probably cost me a lot of winners, especially a lot of Group 1 winners.
But what do you think was the genius of him?
Well, he just had a set program, you know. Like, I think the fact that, you know, how he bought his horses, where he bought his horses, you know, how he raced them and built them up. You know, he was sort of nothing on horses, but once he got them there, he knew how to keep a horse there. And he was a great trainer of good horses, you know. They held their form, they kept improving, and he just got the best out of them, you know, which good trainers do. You know, Bart Cummings, Colin Hayes, all those blokes. People like Waller now. You can't stop them. You know, when they've got the gift, you just can't stop them. They just get better and better.
In his latter years as training, I think one of the horses that gave him great satisfaction was Bounding Away, who you won the 86 Golden Slipper on. Let's have a listen.
Barron trying to get clear, and then Breakfast Creek and Captive Un, Pre-Catalan being taken on by Bounding Away. Imperial Barron behind them, not getting much room, and then Just Looming. Bounding Away's taken the lead narrowly. It's Bounding Away coming away, and Bounding Away wins it. Bounding Away from Just Looming, and on the inside, Imperial Barron, then Pre-Catalan.
How good was she, Mick? Because was it six Group 1 races you ended up winning on Bounding Away?
Yes, great filly. Won the Blue Diamond in a hand, and then went on and won the Golden Slipper and won Two Oaks. So, you know, yeah. Pretty good filly, wasn't she?
Unbelievable.
When you look at bred her and owned her and trained her.
When you look at the calibre of horses today compared to those that you were riding back in the late 80s and early 90s, do you think there's better quality now or back then?
I don't say they're better quality now. There might be some of us good, but, you know, back when I was riding, you know, if you got on a galloper, they can run you 3:32, you know, those brilliant sprinters and brilliant stayers. But I think, you know, they're good. They're not breaking the records like they're much, much better than they were back in those days.
You rode three slipper winners, and one of those was Bint Marskay, who was probably one of the most naturally talented two-year-olds we've ever seen. Who do you think was the best two-year-old you rode?
Bounding Away was the best two-year-old I rode.
Yeah.
But Bint Marskay was brilliant, and she certainly had a lot of ability and a lot of speed. She was always shin-sore when she was a two-year-old too. They had trouble sort of keeping her on her feet, so they done a magnificent job to get her to win a slipper. But I think when she drew the outside barrier, it was just the perfect barrier for her. Because, you know, like, it didn't matter where she drew, she could have led or sat outside the leader. She had a lot of speed. So I think it was a plus when she drew the outside barrier. No horse around. She went bang outside the leader before she went under the yard. You know, she's always going to win. Great filly. Very good filly. But she wasn't as good as Bounding Away.
And the FBI, who won four slippers in a row back then, you rode for all the greats, TJ, Bart. Did you do much riding for Colin Hayes?
Not a lot. I had a few winners for him. I won a new market for them. But, you know, he was a great trainer, no doubt about that. He was pretty different to the other two, but he was a great trainer. I didn't ride a lot from him. I had a few good winners from him. Didn't ride a lot, no.
Was TJ the best trainer you think you worked with?
Yeah, without a doubt. He was in a mould of his own. Like, Bart Cummings was around at that time, and, like, Bart was a super trainer too. You know, accolades, you'd take that off to him every time you saw him. But he was a great trainer, Bart. Tommy was brilliant.
What was the rivalry like, the two big kings of the time in Sydney, Bart and TJ?
Yeah, well, I don't think Bart or Tommy, in my mind, sort of worried about that. They just got on with their own business. You know, like, both wanted to win every Group 1 they could have a horse in. But, you know, to get the amount of ability out of some of those horses that they had and go on and win all those big races, you know, they're brilliant people, really. They really are, because animals aren't easy to train, you know, like, especially to get them to that level. You've got to take your hat off to them.
We've seen in recent years some of our horses perform really well on the international stage, but one of the early trailblazers was Strawberry Road after his win in the Cox Plate. Let's have a listen to that.
Strawberry Road, my goodness, he's a different horse today. He's going to walk in. Kiwi Slave coming from last, going to run second. Strawberry Road won it by four lengths. Second, Kiwi Slave. Third, Mr. McGinty. Fourth, Handsome Seattle from Sir Dapper Depp.
Where do you rate Strawberry Road, Mick?
Oh, right up there. Like, he's up there with the Red Anchor. Look, I had a great career with Strawberry Road, but he just had a little bit of a mental problem at different times. He'd get upset going to the barrier and he'd want to pull hard in his race. It didn't always work out. But if you got him right on his day, he was almost unbeatable. He proved that. He went throughout the world and won everywhere. He's a great horse. But, you know, I flew learning how to ride him, because when I went to ride him in the first start I rode him was in the Rosehill Guineas, and when I went out on the track I dropped over his neck to work into the barriers, and he wanted to bolt. So I thought, geez, I won't be going in behind horses too early here, I'll just sit out and see what happens. So that's what happened. He sat out 4 and 5 wide going around that corner and just drove to the front. As soon as he did, he just dropped a bit. So So it was, yeah, you know, he learned a lot from that. I did the same in the Derby on 21-5. I led on him and he was super. But he could get things wrong sometimes. He got himself upset and you had the horses in front of you. He wouldn't settle. He'd want to run over the top of them. He could beat himself, but he was a great horse.
The Cox Plate provided you with so many great memories, but there was also the unbelievable drama of the 1992 Cox Plate on Naturalism. We'll have a listen to the incident, and then I'm keen to get your thoughts and memories of that day.
I'll superimpose, peeling to the outside with Better Loosen Up. There's a fall! There's a fall in the Cox Plate, and Naturalism's lost the rider. Citizen is out of the race, and so is Palace Rain. Rough Habit has been knocked out of it now, and is the race to the 500-metre mark now, and the leader here is King Jitsu.
Just listening to the names, it is arguably the greatest Cox Plate we've ever assembled, and you were on the $1.90 favourite Naturalism, who was almost unbeatable at that time. What are your memories of that ride?
Well, he was sheer unlucky. It was nothing to do with his own fault. He was, you know, I'd got myself in a position that I had horses all around me, and I knew that I had to get out. At the half mile, I'd sort of forced my way out three wide and nearly four wide outside of the horse. Peter Hutchins was riding in front of me. And apparently what happened was Peter Hutchins' horse in front got too close to the horse inside of him, and he must have hit his front leg or whatever, and he just tipped over. When he tipped out with him, I couldn't avoid him. He tried to avoid him, my horse, but he just went to come straight down in front of him. And he balked and jumped him, but he was already on the ground. But he was bolting that day. He would have been very hard to beat. And he was the type of horse I rode in a lot of his races. When he would travel well, he knew he was going well. There was no pretend with him. You know, like when he was travelling. He had plenty under his tank. If he'd have got out that day, he would have been off and gone by the time I got home then.
Yeah. Gee, could you believe it when it was unfolding around you?
Well, it happens so quick, you know, you don't get a chance to do anything about it, you know. It's just one of those miracle things, you know. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it. You would have won for sure.
Throughout your career, did you have many falls?
We all have our falls. We all have a few. You know, I never got badly injured. I'd say the worst was when I was in the race in the Blue Diamond field on one of Lee Friedman's horses. And I had a very sore arm. Left arm, and they said, no, it's only bruising. Anyway, a week later, it was still killing me. And I went, no, apparently what happened, the horse had stood on my arm and severed the tendon, and the tendon was in a ball up in my wrist. They kept saying it was just swelling from the bruising. I was very lucky I didn't lose my arm. That I had to go into hospital and had about 5 operations and sewn it back together.
Gee, and what did you... Were you riding in between or doing track work?
No. When it happened, they checked me out in Melbourne, of course. They said, no, you're only got badly bruising with a sore arm. And I went back to Sydney, and I was still in a lot of pain the next day. So I went to my doctor there, and he told me the same thing. No, I don't think there's any problem with it, nothing, because I'd moved my fingers and everything. See? So they weren't worried too much about anything. So I had a home on the Gold Coast. She said, you know, go and take it easy for a few days. Well, I went on the Monday, and on the Thursday, like I was in terrible pain, and my arm was up like a balloon. So I went and saw a doctor here, and he said, I'll send you straight to the hospital. The bloke had looked at me. As soon as he looked at me, he said, how'd you get up here? I said, I drove. He said, you won't be driving home. He said, you'll be a week in hospital. I was lucky not to lose the arm.
Gosh, unbelievable.
Yeah, dangerous gun racing.
Well, I was about to say to you, we see it week in, week out, and we just spoke to Ryan Maloney this morning, who had a close shave on Saturday on Isotope. It's the toughness and the mental, I suppose, fortitude of the jockeys, and the bravery is something that we don't see in any other sport, really.
No, well, any day a jockey can go out there in any race and get killed. There's so many do, you know, the percentage is not good. But, racing's cleaned up a lot, you know, the stewards pretty good with they're keeping it clean. But there's always an incident that can happen. It's an accident. And so you worry when you've got, you know, you don't think of it yourself when you're riding because you love the game so much and it's a career for you. But, you know, when you've got children or kids riding, you know, that's when it comes into your mind. You know, I get the shivers every day when I watch Luke ride.
I bet you do. I was going to say, is it tougher when you've been a jockey or is it easier to watch your son be riding in races?
It's easier for me to be riding in races than watching him ride.
A few other good horses you've ridden. Citizen to win the Caulfield Cup Research. How did you rate them in your career and those moments?
Well, Citizen was a very good horse, you know. I won a BMW on in the Caulfield Cup. You know, I was probably a little bit unlucky in Betaloosan's up Cox Plate. I run third that year, but I took off on him a bit early. You know, he's one of those old horses when he got back in a fast pace, hard track. He didn't want to travel. So I wound him up a long way from him trying to get him going. But I think if I could have waited, you know, he probably would have won. You know, what's name followed me up, Betaloosan up, had the sitting shot at me. And he got me over the last, you know, 50, 60 metres. But I think had I waited that year, you know, another furlong, furlong and a half, you know, he probably would have got him because those horses were pretty tight at the finish. And he was a big, strong finisher, but I just made too long a run on him.
I got a lot of SMSs coming in saying how much they loved you, Mick, including one Gregory Michael Hall, who you had some great battles with. He said you would never have won that 92 Cox Plate. What was it like riding against G?
He's a top jockey and he was very competitive, there's no doubt about that. A lot of fun in the room too, you know, great wit. We had some good times together for sure.
Now, you were known as the Enforcer, Mick. It's a nickname that probably wouldn't be allowed today with the controversy that is going on about the whip. What are your thoughts, modern day whips in racing?
I think, reduced it down pretty much to as far as they can go, I think. You know, like I think that they're a very important part of a jockey's tool to control the horse. I'd hate to see races run. I'm pretty sure most jockeys hate to see races run without carrying a whip. It's just almost impossible, you know. But they carry whips when they ride show jumping horses. They carry whip and trotting, you know. All horses, like horses, are unpredictable. Doesn't matter how well they're educated or how long they've been in training, they're unpredictable. They can do things that you wouldn't even believe. So, you know, it's all right for the blokes to sit on the side and say, "Well, they shouldn't eat them, shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that." Look, you know, like they're big, tough animals. You know, those whips they've got today are well padded. They don't hurt a lot. They might make a bit of a noise, but you could give yourself a pretty good crack with one of those whips today, and it wouldn't hurt. But I'd hate to see it change to a situation where they weren't carrying whips in racing. I don't think it'll happen because I don't think the jockeys or the trainers would allow it. So let's hope it goes in the right direction.
A couple of quick ones before I let you go, Mick. Best jockey you rode against?
Oh, there's many, honestly. There's so many. You know, like I rode in an era where some great jockeys, and you could name a dozen of them. And if I start naming jockeys, I'll miss someone, and then I'll get the dirts on me. So I just say, like, some of those competitive riders I rode against in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane, and even overseas, they're great jockeys. And great jockeys prove themselves. They go for years and years and years. They're not flash in the pan. When you get a great jockey, champion jockey, they ride for years consistently. Look at Damien Oliver today, you know. No matter where he goes, he's always riding winners, always riding consistent. And whether it's here, overseas, Hong Kong, they're just great jockeys, you know. Can't stop it. So I admire them. They're great people, and they're brave men, and they deserve everything they get.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's the best horse you think you've seen?
I don't think I've seen too many as good as Kingston Town, because I think he spent half his career with leg problems. But I think in modern era, hard to go past Wink. You know, she had an amazing amount of ability. And I think she would have just about won any race he put her in. That's my opinion. I think he could have run in a Melbourne Cup. I know she was well placed, you know, the last couple of years in the racing, because people that owned her loved her, wanted to keep her career intact and her record intact. But I guess she had an amazing amount of ability. But I never seen a horse that could do some of the things she did. She could race on the pace and win. She could race back from last and win. She could be last at the furlong and win. She could give horses that were in front of her 8 and 10 length start with 100 to go, still win. Seen her do many things that you admire. And I think if he'd have got her ready and run her in an Everest, I think she would have bolted one of them in too. And she's one of those horses that she's so much pace in those sprint races on a decent track there at Randwick. I tell you what, I'd be backing her. A great mare.
No doubt about that. Hey, Mick, it's been so much pleasure to chat and go back through the history books. An amazing career, 88 Group 1 wins, Hall of Fame legend. And I know you've been helping out the guys at Fan Fave, who are also doing some advertising with us here. And you are one of the legends that they have made merchandise with. Stubby holders, T-shirts, caps, and we've got three Mick Dittman Fan Fave packs to give away to our listeners. So the first three callers on 1300 652 927 who can answer this question. Who was the first Golden Slipper? I'm going to make it hard. The first Golden Slipper winner that Mick had. He won three Golden Slippers, bounding away Bid Mars K the last two. What was the first Golden Slipper winner that Mick Dittman rode? Do you want to give a hint, Mick?
Geez, I tell you what. I think most people would know. well, it's got something to do with aces.
All right, good on you, mate. Hey, Mick, enjoy your time at the Gold Coast. Hopefully you can get back to Singapore at some stage, but it's great to hear you're fighting fit and enjoying life. It's been brilliant to catch up.
Yes, it's been great. I had a great career. I'm very blessed. And those packs are given away. They're quality packs. They're extremely well made, and I think it's a great thing for racing.
Absolutely. FanFave, you want to jump on the website, it is www.fanfave.com.au. You can order whatever FanFave pack of your favourite jockeys that you want. And no doubt Mick Dittman's going to be one of the most popular. Mick, great to catch up, mate.
A pleasure, mate. Thank you very much.
Mick Dittman, the lead.